Welcome to the Dandelion Effect Podcast, a space for organic conversation about the magic of living a connected life. Just like the natural world around us, we are all linked through an intricate web, a never-ending ripple that spans across the globe. Here, we explore the ideas that our guests carry through the world, remember who and what inspired them along the way, and uncover the seeds that help them blossom into their unique version of this human experience. This podcast is a production of the Feathered Pipe Foundation, whose mission is to help people find their direction through access to programs and experiences that support healing, education, community, and empowerment. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Dandelion Effect Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Vantrese. And today I'm bringing you one of the sweetest episodes I've ever recorded with someone who has become like extended family to me over the years, Tom Ryan. Tom was the caretaker of the Featherpipe Ranch for 33 years, originally coming to the ranch in 1975 for a part-time job. And as the story goes, he fell in love and stuck around. Tom has been around the retreat center longer than almost anyone else at this point, and preserving his stories have been a priority to us. If you haven't yet, check out the interview I did with him 2 years ago on our Featherpipe Roots page under the Community tab of our website. It's titled More Than a Job, It Was a Love Affair. These days, Tom lives in a gorgeous house that he designed and built just above the ranch property on Old Hippie Lane. And he keeps busy as a property manager, dog dad to his new 2-year-old lab puppy Bodie, and resident elder in the summers. If you've been to the ranch, you've probably seen him at mealtimes, making everyone at his table laugh with stories of his life of adventure and serendipity. At the ripe age of 82, Tom's sense of humor is vibrant and a little bit mischievous, which keeps us all entertained. And there's a softness and simplicity to his wisdom that I have found incredibly supportive and helpful in my own journey. Today, Tom tells stories about going from Navy communication specialist to hairdresser to pipe fitter to caretaker of the ranch. We talk about the law of attraction, what it's meant to him to be given the gift of fatherhood, and how he shows up to this role day after day. Because I have come to know Tom so well over the years, this conversation may feel more like friendly banter than a professional interview. But that's what's so special about this podcast, a variety of guests who bring out different parts of me as a host and you as a listener. We're also joined by his puppy in the background at times, trying to get his 2 cents in as the two of us sit at Tom's kitchen table for this conversation on a beautiful snowy day in the Montana mountains. Without further ado, please enjoy this conversation and help me welcome my friend, Tom Ryan. The place I want to start is telling the story of how we met, because I started to think about the only way that we really know somebody is kind of in the context of ourselves. And since you and I know each other so well, I thought it would be fun.
Good.
I came in 2016, but I don't think we met.
No.
And then I packed up my Nissan Altima and came back and was going to just like live here and stay in Montana, unbeknownst to the ranch. I had put the intention out and they invited me for 2 weeks. I think I'm going to try to stay all summer. And so I was staying in a tent. When that was available, I stayed in a yurt for a little while, but then there were a couple workshops where it was full. And of course, like, I wasn't a paying guest or a staff member or anything. I was just kind of a vagabond.
Right.
So I remember sitting on the picnic table, and you, since you're a property manager, you had, you know, different places rented out. And there was one on the gulch, and I asked you, like, what do you think about me moving in? And you said, I have a better idea. Move in with me.
Hey.
And we didn't really know each other too well at the time.
I didn't know you at all.
So why did you do that?
Why did I do that? Well, number one, you approached me and asked me if I could talk to Christine and have her rent you a space in that house, which was Heidi's house on the ranch there. And I said no. I mean, even though she was a single woman in a, it's only one bedroom, but, I mean, she had a weight room, she had a jewelry making room, she had print making room, everything going. But I'll give you a better offer. You can come live in my house and no questions asked, full run of the house, no rent, just come and do it. Mm-hmm. Why did I do that? I have a daughter about the same age as you, and she's out in the world also, and I felt, you know, someday hopefully somebody would do a nice turnaround for her, mm-hmm. and it was easy for me to do it for you. I'm living in a house, got 4 bedrooms, and I'm the only one there, and a dog, and sure, no commitment, no nothing, it just come in there. If you want to do it, fine. If not, it's all right.
Mm-hmm. That's where it began.
Right. God.
And since then, I've lived with you a handful of times at different times. Yeah, it has just blossomed from there.
Right.
I would imagine the question you get the most is, how did you come to the ranch?
My stock answer is I drove here in a 54 Chevy half-ton pickup with a camper on the back.
Yeah. That paints a good hippie picture in right. general. In context of maybe how you found out about the ranch, because there's so much that happened in your life leading up to coming to the ranch, of course. You were in your mid-30s when you came here.
36.
So, of course, tons of life happened before that.
Right.
But I'd love you to tell the story of being in California and house-sitting Judith Lassiter's house, who I just interviewed for the last episode, and, like, how you even found out that this place existed and ended up here.
Okay, I was living in Berkeley with Heidi. Heidi was going to school at the San Francisco Art Institute and doing yoga classes with Judith, and they would go to the San Francisco Center. And so I would see Judith dropping Heidi off or picking her up or something like that, and knew nothing about Montana going on. In fact, I had a friend that met in Death Valley who built a place in Montana, in Victor area, and always wanted me to come to Montana, and I never did. So, Judith got invited to come to Montana to teach the first mm-hmm. yoga workshop, and they originally asked Laughing Water. Actually, it was Paul Superak at the time.
Before his name was Laughing
right.
Water.
Uh-huh. If he would house sit their house, and he agreed to, but they found out he was a vegetarian. They asked him if he would come and cook at the ranch for the workshop. So he said, okay, so he agreed to do that. And so then they asked Heidi if she would house sit their house. She said, yeah, okay, because her house that she was living in, there was 2 other women, they were done with school also, and they were leaving. And so I said, yeah, she would. But then a week before the workshop was supposed to start, or Judith and Eric were going to leave, Heidi decided to go back east for the summer. Well, then they were desperate. They just wanted a warm body. And
somebody to keep a light on or two.
Right. And asked me if I would house sit their house. I mean, they didn't know me other than that I was Heidi's boyfriend, and that was about it. I agreed to. I said, okay, I would. Well, they weren't taking any more chances. They quick packed up and left and got out of town as quick as they could. And I took over house sitting their house. And when the workshop was over, they came home, and the first time I really met Ike, her husband, and we sat down one evening and talked till like 2 o'clock in the morning, telling me all about the ranch and asking me about what I did, et cetera, et cetera, and finding out that I had some building experience, and asked if I'd be interested to come to the ranch to do some building, just be a part-time job. Well, I had interest at that point to go into sailing, mm-hmm. but I said, okay, well, you know, if it's only going to be a short while, I'll come up. So I had to be interviewed to do so. So I went to William Standiger at Holistic Life Seminars, and he called India and said, hey, we have this guy here willing to come work at the ranch. What do you say? And first of all, India said, no, we have somebody. We don't need anybody. Forget it.
You're like, this is confusing. I was invited.
So before he could get from his office to the little room I was sitting in waiting for, Indy called him back and said, oh, we just heard from our caretaker. He was on vacation and he's not coming back. So, yeah, send this guy up. 2 weeks later, I drove up to Montana and showed up at the ranch in my 54 Chevy half-ton pickup with a homemade camper on the back. And there I was.
Mm-hmm.
And I had never met India. I knew nothing about the ranch except what Ike had told me. And there's the Feather Pipe Ranch, a couple old log cabins and a nice pond. And okay, well, this might work out.
Mm-hmm.
So India and her sister Vijaya and another woman were sitting on the front lawn, and I went over and introduced myself, and we sat and chatted for a while about what was going on. And India and them had to take this woman to the doctor, so they got up ready to leave. India came over and shook my hand and said, the ranch is yours. And it has been ever since.
And she trusted you enough just in that short period of time. I mean, I've heard you say that, like, in Montana, a handshake is a contract.
Right.
She shook your hand and left
the
property and said, okay, treat it as your own.
Right.
And I know that you consider this place to be just like such sacred land. I'm curious if you had that feeling right when you got there, or is it something that has just grown over time, or maybe a little bit of both?
It's a little bit of both. I mean, when I got there and stepped out of my truck and first stepped onto the property of the Feather Pipe Ranch, something hit me. I knew at that point that I had arrived someplace that was special, and something about it. And that feeling has gone with me forever, and it's still there. I mean, I still think the ranch and this area is special, and to be part of it was phenomenal. I came for a part-time job, and it only lasted 33 years.
And was very full-time.
And it was a lot of full-time, yeah. There was workshops going on all the time during the summer anyways. Occasionally, I would sit into part of a workshop. Only workshop we ever got into full-time was out-of-body workshop with Robert Monroe. And that was an easy workshop because we laid on the paths in the main lodge with earphones on and fell asleep. So it was an easy workshop. Actually, India had been pregnant with Crystal. And at the end of that workshop, Crystal decided to be born. She was born outside behind the lake cabin with about 20 people of the out-of-body workshop in audience watching this birth. And it was great. And one of the people there...
You could not nail the timing any better.
Right. I mean, there was even John Voight, the movie actor, who had just finished a movie where he got an Oscar for. He was part of the audience at the time. So it was a special moment. It was a special birth. That was, like I said, the only workshop that I really did full. Other ones, I would go in and sit in on a lecture or something like that, but I was too busy. There was too much going on. And I always said my yoga was karma yoga, being out there and doing it.
And being in service to the land and maintaining the property. And India said something in her interview, like, I always think it's ridiculous, like, how much money we spend to make it look like nothing ever happened here.
Right.
The amount of work just cleaning up the land after a long winter, you know, just gathering sticks and figuring out what has happened during the winter to the facilities.
Right.
And trying to prevent that, but then also it's inevitable when there's, you know, a couple feet of snow on the ground for 7
yeah,
months.
Yeah, I mean, setting back up again was always, you know, a chore. I mean, we'd have busted pipes, water pipes that we had to put back together again, and firewood to get in. It was, like I said, I'd never considered it a job. It was a love affair.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a hell of a lot of work involved in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't do it by myself.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, of everything that was going on and the different buildings that we did, I mean, the bathhouse was the first thing that we did. There was always other people there, which was good. I basically never had any education in building or construction or anything, and it was everything that I just knew I could do it, so I did it.
Yeah, I want to talk about that because, I mean, one of the things that I admire about you so much is that you have an attitude of trusting your capabilities and that the right opportunities will come to you. And if the right opportunities come to you, you're going to take a chance on yourself.
Right.
And so many of your stories of traveling both before the ranch, you know, living in Death Valley. Your mom used to say, why do you want to live in a town of like 10 people? And you're like, I've met everybody I ever needed to meet in Death Valley.
Right.
I met my best friends. I met Heidi. And, you know, the life happens from there. But as far as building and not having any formal experience in that, but then showing up to be a caretaker and essentially a jack of all trades, whatever needed to be done at the ranch, that's a huge undertaking for somebody who hasn't gone through any kind of apprenticeship or,
right,
you know.
Well, basically the only training I've actually had outside of the military was cosmetology. I had a license to do hair.
Yeah.
And people ask me, so if you got a license to do hair, what are you doing building? And I said, well, I was a better builder than I was a hairdresser.
But you still did some people's hair.
I did. First workshop after I was there was all women, and I think I did almost all their hair.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Pretty dynamic.
Right.
You know, I even consider it to be kind of courage, just knowing that you can do something even though, like, you haven't done it before, and having the courage to try. I think there's so many people that get held back by perfectionism.
Right.
Where, like, I'm going to stay safe and I'm only going to do things that I know I can do, and I'm not going to take a risk to build an entire bathhouse when I've never done something like this, or put in a full extension on the lake cabin, or build a whole dining hall, or so many of the structures down at the ranch you built and helped design, and kitchen renovations and all that. So how do you reflect on that and view that in your mind? It seems like a life philosophy for you.
It was just, you know, once I was here, it was just everything had to be done, and fingers kept pointing at me. I was the guy that had to make sure it got done. I had to figure out how to do it. And I had, you know, a little experience just in doing things, remodeling a little bit. So it was just a continuation of it, only on a grander stake scale, more or less.
Mm-hmm.
I had to redo a lot of the plumbing in the main lodge. We went from old galvanized pipes to copper pipes, and then some PVC pipes. And electricity, I had to do a lot of the electrical work. And my theory with electricity was just do one wire at a time.
Test one wire at a time?
Right, don't touch them both. It always worked.
Mm-hmm.
Even in the military, I just did what had to be done, and I ended up being a head of a crew wherever I was at. I had 4 or 5 guys working under me.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it just fell naturally for me to do what had to be done and show up and do it.
Mm-hmm. Who have been some of the influential people in your life, and whether it's people that you remember as a young kid looking up to, or even later in life, does anybody come to mind when you think about, like, who instilled in you the things that you've used and have helped you through life even till today?
Wow. My dad, just as being a dad, not necessarily as being a teacher or anything. I mean, he had 6 kids, and so just learning to be a dad from him was probably my biggest thing.
Mm-hmm. What about, I know that you tell that one story of being at Scotty's Castle in Death Valley. Not that that was a person that instilled anything in you, but that was a moment.
That changed our life. I mean, I was just finishing up working with the phone company in Anaheim, California. I've been working for them for 7 years in different positions. Had acquired my license to do hair, so I was hired on to start in a salon in Newport Beach. And so we had some vacation time coming from the phone company and decided we better take it now because once I start in the salon, I'm not going to have time. So we went to Death Valley on a week vacation and toured the valley and ended up one day at Scotty's Castle at the north end of the valley and did a tour through the castle. And so the next morning, we still camped out, and we were watching these tour buses pull up to the castle, and mostly senior citizens and a few younger people would get off the bus and go into the gift shop and have a cup of coffee and buy something for the grandkids and wait until everybody got ready to go. And my wife, Diane, at the time, and I looked at each other, and we said, no way. We're not going to wait till I'm 65 to go tour. So we cut our vacation short. Even a week, we cut that short, went home, sold our house, sold 2 cars, quit our jobs, sold a whole bunch of furniture, bought a brand new VW bus.
What color?
It was cream colored. We had air conditioning. That was nice.
Yeah.
And outfitted it for camping, loaded it up, and spent my 30th birthday on the road to Alaska. So that was a turning point in my life.
Yeah.
And basically have never looked back from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you haven't had too many straight jobs in your life, I would say, outside of the Navy, right?
Right. Phone company was the longest I ever had a job like that. Navy, I was in there for 4 years. And some friends of mine, John, who I met in Death Valley, and Gretchen, who I met in Berkeley, was visiting, and I made a bold statement that I don't think I'll ever have another straight job in my life again, but I have enough confidence in myself that whatever I want, I'll have. If I want a sailboat, I'll have a sailboat. It doesn't have to be mine, but I can come and go on it, sail on it, do what I want. Or if I want a ranch, I'll have a ranch. It doesn't have to be mine. I can go live on it, be there, mm-hmm. work there, whatever. And before that month was over, I had 5 sailboats and 1 ranch at my disposal. And as it turns out, I took the ranch.
I mean, that theme is coming up again of just like that trust and, you know, things happening and some people, I would say, maybe even people that are associated with the ranch and more the spiritual realm of things might call that manifestation or the law of attraction. I know that's something that you have recently found language around.
Right.
Tell me about what you are learning about the law of attraction and how it relates to how your life has unfolded.
I mean, Heidi had, for years, had been sending me information about law of attraction, and I never really tied it on to anything that had to do with my life.
Mm-hmm.
There were nice quotes, nice sayings, and that, but it didn't really mean anything to my life.
Mm-hmm.
Until one day I read something on my own about the law of attraction and realized, oh my God, that's how I got to the ranch. That's how I had all them sailboats, just because I said something out into the universe and it came back a hell of a lot faster than I ever thought it could happen. Mm-hmm. And that was my biggest eye-opening to how it actually can work. And as I look back, I see that different things in my life, how my life unfolded, was probably a lot to do with that.
Mm-hmm. What are some of those things that you've been reflecting on?
When I got out of the military, I went to work with a phone company. In the military, I was a radio man. I had a secret cryptographic need-to-know clearance. And I had applied for a job on Navy Times before I got out, and I got a letter back once I got to California. As it turned out, it was the CIA was looking for me.
They weren't looking for you as a wanted person,
no.
Right?
Well, they wanted me to go to work.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I couldn't believe it. I mean, the application was like in hard copy triplicate, over 8 pages long. Questions about everything. Luckily, I had a job with the phone company, and I tried to put it off, and they wanted it now, so that didn't happen. Mm-hmm. So it was like, I think the law of attraction at that point was preventing me from making a foul move. Mm-hmm. And then went to work in Alaska in communication and was assigned to man one of the microwave stations in the outback of Alaska. When we came back from Alaska, we wanted to get back in the desert and went to El Centro. For some reason or other, we knew nothing about it except it was in the desert.
Where's that?
Right on the border of Mexico and California.
California, okay.
So we went there and rented a little house and got the utilities hooked up and spent a day to go out and look for a job. And within an hour, Diane and I met back and realized that El Centro was not our town. So we quick got out of there. I called Death Valley, asked if they were hiring, and they said, yes, we're opening in 2 weeks and we're hiring people. So we drove all night, got to Death Valley, and we applied for a job. It was with the general manager of the Furnace Creek facilities. And my wife, at that point, Diane, applied to work in the kitchen or the bakery and that, and said, okay, that was fine. And my application said I would work in maintenance or work mowing the lawns or washing dishes. I just wanted to be in the desert. I didn't care what that was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so the guy says, anything else you can do? That's a pretty, bold statement to make me want to do dishes or mow lawns. And Diane piped up and she said, well, he's got a license to do hair. And the guy about fell off his chair. And he says, you have a license to do hair and you want to wash dishes? And I said, well, I figured there's more dishes to wash than there's hair to cut.
Yeah.
And he said, well, we're opening up in 2 weeks. I have a salon in the hotel. I do not have an operator. Would you be interested in having the shop? And I says, hey, I have a license. I've never worked in a shop other than going to school. I don't know about that. He says, I'll mention it again. He says, we're opening in 2 weeks, and I have a salon, and I don't have an operator. Are you interested? I said, if you're game, I'm game. So, mm-hmm. Okay. So it ended up, I got a salon to work in. They supplied the water, the clientele, the room, a house to live in, 3 meals a day in their own dining room with a white tablecloth on our table, with a waitress that takes our order. It was like incredible. We just got done camping all over the place.
Yeah. Felt like luxury.
And it was like,
and you're going to pay me? Wow.
Right. And it that fell into our laps, more or less. And so that had to do something with law of attraction, and put something out, this is what I want, and did it. So I went to work for a season, and there was a little town on the outskirts, Death Valley Junction, and it was owned by two families. And the women of the two families one day came down to get their hair done at my salon, and come to find out, they getting the hair done was just part of their trip. They wanted to check me out and see if I'd be interested in going to Death Valley Junction and opening up a shop. Well, that wasn't in the cards at the point. When we finished Furnace Creek in Death Valley, we were going to go, actually we were going to go back to Alaska, and then that didn't work out. And we went, turned around and went to Mexico. We went way down into Oaxaca in Mexico. First year I put over 36,000 miles on the VW van.
Oh my gosh.
And so.
Sounds like some of my travels, my cross country travels.
So when we got back, we went through a couple other things, and I made a call to Death Valley Junction, asked if the offer was still good. They said yes, so bingo, we drove in the middle of July to Death Valley to go do a job. And so we did, crazy as we were.
Mm-hmm.
They gave us a house to live in, picked any part of this hotel that you want to renovate to make your living accommodations there. So we did. We had a shop for a gift shop. We had a barber shop, beauty shop, a kitchen, bathroom, a storeroom, a living room, a bedroom situation.
Mm-hmm.
And it just fell to
it
us.
It just happened.
You know, those things just kept happening.
So this is really reminding me of this quote that I have seen or heard, read somewhere, where it says, like, what's meant for you will not miss you.
Right.
You had some opportunities, like the Death Valley Junction opportunity. You said, oh, well, no, not right now. We're going to go to Alaska. We're going to go to Mexico. But then it was there when you were ready for it.
Right.
And I think that a lot of people, I guess I'll just speak for myself, sometimes put so much pressure on myself for making the right decision. You know, if I come to a crossroads or all the million times a day I'm trying to figure life out, sometimes I think I can really make a wrong decision as far as which path that I want to take.
Right.
And when I can fall into a place of more trust and like co-creation with life, I really believe that what I am meant to do and what is meant for me will find a way. It doesn't matter if I veer off and go on these off ramps and side tangents and stuff. That's part of it. And you will come back to what path is meant for you.
Right. You won't make a wrong turn.
You can't make a wrong turn,
but it'll always come back to where you're supposed to be going.
Yeah.
And I was in Berkeley with Heidi, and I had the opportunity. I hired on a salon on Telegraph Avenue, a shop called Great Links. I had long hair at that time, but I had a week, unfortunately, before the job started. And I went to another place, it was a school in San Francisco, to brush up on a few techniques. And so the last day there, there was another school on the ground floor of this building I was at. So I went there to pick up on what they were doing. When a guy was working on my hair, I just told him, just, you know, trim it up. I wanted to see what's going on. And the instructor came over and cut my hair really short on one side.
Oh my God.
And I kept from knocking him out, but I did yell at him, got up and left without paying, and went home and tried to make one side long and one side short. Must have been something out of Alice in Wonderland. And Monday I showed up at Great Lengths to go to work, and they wouldn't hire me because my hair was too short. So I went over the hill to Walnut Creek, hired on to a shop there, and I was there for at least a week, maybe a little longer, but not very long. And one day I was doing this woman's hair and standing in the back of the chair telling stories. And so she said, well, you seem like you've done a few things. What are you standing here doing hair? And I thought about that, and I said, that's a good question. So I quit and walked out.
After you finished her haircut?
I did finish her. I did finish her. I was
You don't
polite.
Want to leave her in the same place you got left in with the half short, half long.
So there I was. I needed something to do. And a friend of Heidi's that she had met through another friend was working a job. So I got hired through him, and I became a crew leader and a pipe fitting crew building a submarine rescue ship for the U.S. Navy. Now that's a bit of a stretch going from cutting hair to building a submarine rescue ship.
Mm-hmm.
But what the hell, somebody had to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew which end of a pipe fitting tool to pick up, so mm-hmm. it worked. At that point, it was where I got invited to go to the ranch.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so,
mm-hmm.
and it went all this cycle, you know, through all this stuff, and ended up here at the Feather Pipe Ranch.
Yeah. It seems like you're in a phase of your life now where you're doing a lot of reflection on, you know, you've started writing this book, this memoir that you're working on, and really wanting to preserve stories and get them down, seemingly for yourself to get them down, but also because they're fantastic to share with people, and because there's such magic in the way that things have unfolded in your life. Is there anything in particular that sparked this reflective period for you?
Traveling was a lot of it, a lot of memories.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it was with the ranch. One year we went to Peru, another year we went to India, another year we went to Nepal. And so those were special moments to travel with India and Vijaya and Crystal and Nikki and Chris Pattaya at that point, bless his soul.
Mm-hmm.
Danny Libby was one of them. John P., another great one, who has now left us. And then just being here, just being at the ranch and seeing it grow and become what it is.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel about the way that the ranch has grown? I mean, you are still so involved going down for meals, being a mentor to the people who are trying to keep things going on the staff side of things, and being a sounding board as an elder to those of us who are trying to stay connected with the original mission and preserve the essence of it, and do that in a way that fits with the times, you know, moving things online, doing things like this podcast, upgrading facilities to have to compare to this retreat industry that exists now that didn't exist when you guys first started. How does it feel to now be in this position that you are in? What's that experience like?
Well, I think it has, in a sense, it has arrived, and it's just continuing to grow into what it is. I remember, I'll go back to my first summer here. Indy and I were on the boat, that old boat that's still at the ranch, out on the lake one afternoon. And Indy is telling me that, she says, I don't know how to pay you for being here. We don't have much money. I said, I have a nice place to live. You know, we have food to eat and a lot of people to be with. I says, I'm in great shape. I said, I don't need that. I said, let's just see if we can put this place on the map. And I said, if we do, fine. And if we fall on our face in an attempt to do it, hopefully we can walk out with each of us a quarter in our pocket and say we had a great time. And so then I remember when she was on her deathbed, and I went and visited her, and I told her, I says, India, we did it. I said, it is on the map, and it was just voted as the number one retreat center in the country. So you can go in peace.
Mm-hmm.
And she did. So that's a big reflection right there, mm-hmm. as to where we are from where we started.
Yeah.
I think there's a song about it, we've come a long ways. And we did, and it's nice to see the people that, who are here now working at the ranch and trying to keep it going and improve, continue as to what it was and upgrading. And the energy that these people have, who they are here because they want to be here. And that helps.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of people have a job that they're going to because they need some money. And I'm sure these people also need the money, but they're here because they want to be here.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody seems to mesh together nicely. And as far as, like you were talking about telling stories and history, the person that you want to get for history of the ranch is Howard. I mean, he can tell you who was here on such and such a day, what they were wearing, and what we were having for dinner that day. And it's nice to be able to share the elderhood with him.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's really special to me, and I have said it before, where part of what makes the ranch so special and different from other retreat centers, like, you know, you can go to Omega and Kripalu and some of those other places that are doing fantastic conferences and workshops and things. And they're big. They're big centers. So there's, you know, thousands or at least hundreds of people there at a time. And with the ranch, it's like one workshop at a time, very intimate. And when you come in, you become a part of the family.
Right.
And you get
right.
to meet you. I mean, how cool is it that people get to come in to orientation and they're in the main lodge and sitting in the circle, and the first people that they get to meet are you, who's been here for 46 years, Howard, who's been here, you know, close to that. Amy was here this year to be able to say, I'm Tom's daughter and I grew up at the ranch. Heidi, who's been here too. It's like, you don't get that at other places. And for me, developing such a close relationship with the ranch and having it be a part of my work and my path and my support team, really, and my friends, that original crew of people have been such an important part of that.
Another elder that we have to mention also is Vijaya. And she's another one with a thousand stories.
Oh, gosh.
Just get her going, and it's another adventure.
She's basically are swept off into another world.
Another world, you know, like on a magic carpet.
Perfect.
Right, right.
Maybe the last topic that I want to touch on, and I'd be remiss if I didn't, is you as a parent. You are such a loving, involved, and engaged dad to Sean and Amy. And I know from previous conversations that you being a dad and doing it in the way that you show up to it has been a really intentional thing.
Right.
And wanting to create a relationship with your kids that you wish that you had, just that open lines of communication, being able to say, I love you, and to tell the truth about things and to really have your emotions be involved in the relationships. So I'm curious just to have you reflect on what you have created as a life and as a dad.
Well, first of all, I wouldn't be a dad if I didn't have a mother for these kids.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where Heidi came in at. And she came to the ranch, I think, a year after I came, and pretty much has spent years and years here running yoga vacations after she was first running the kitchen. And then we actually got married at the ranch, and we lived at Sky Farm for, I think, 7 to 9 years. We lived at Sky Farm. Sean was born while we were still living at Sky Farm. And then we were starting to build this house at that point. Heidi was a great mom, still is a great mom. And I think because of the fact that I was more mature, I won't say I was older, I don't use that word much, but I was advanced in age and I had a little more experience in life, it was easier to be able to devote time to these two little people that came into our lives. It's always been a great treat for me to be a dad. They love the ranch, even though they're both in California working. Their hearts and mind are still with the ranch. In fact, Sean has planned on coming back for a couple weeks this summer, wants to do a workshop. They were here partially during the summer. Amy was here 2 months this summer, luckily being able to work remotely. It's a treat to be with these kids. And the nice thing about it is the kids like to be with their parents, mm-hmm. which doesn't really happen a lot in this society. I mean, kids grow up and the first thing they want to do is get as far away from their parents as they can. My kids like to go on vacation with us. They'll even plan, let's go here or let's go there, let's do this. So it's beyond belief almost that have two kids that love to be with the parents and the parents love to be with the kids. Mm-hmm. Even though at this point Heidi and I are separated and divorced, we are in constant contact and it helps keep the family as a family and helps being able to be a good dad. We've always tried to give them, you know, much support as we can. I mean, even Amy was on the varsity football team in high school.
And I've seen that picture.
Why would she do it? Because she was gutsy enough. She knew that somewhere down the line, something that she had got from her parents, that she could do anything.
Yeah. I was going to ask, what exactly were you trying to instill in them that was either different than what you had, or you just knew that this is how you wanted to be as a parent?
Just that you are your own person, you know, and you can do what you want to do. We'll support you mm-hmm. and what you do and help you along the way as best we can. My family, I grew up, my mother was great. She was a great mom. My dad actually was a great dad also. He loved his children. He had 6 of them. But he was a hardcore raising his kids. I mean, he definitely believed in punishment, and my brother and I knew what it was all about. And I didn't want to be that kind of a dad. I wanted to be easy, love, and make everything nicer for them. And it worked, you know, made it easy for them to want to be with us mm-hmm. and be around me. And one of the things we did, built the only skate park in Helena, and it was one of the first ones in Montana. For some odd reason, I got involved in it and became the parent helping these kids along the way with this project. And I became involved in a youth advisory council. I didn't ever have anything to do with a government whatsoever. And here I'm in meetings with the mayors and the city lawyers. And in fact, there was one point that we had it all designed to be in the Memorial Park, and that wasn't working. And so the mayor found out that we could do it over by the YMCA. And I told the mayor, I says, whatever you do, don't put that word out. You go to ask the kids if it's okay. Don't tell them that we're going to move over there. You ask them if it's okay that we move over and put the skate park there instead of where we had it designed for. Mm-hmm. And so she did. She called a meeting and she asked the kids if we can do it there. And they said, we don't care where you build it. Let's just get it built.
And we're ready to skate.
Right. From the beginning of when we got involved with it was a 5.5-year project to get to the opening day. These kids were in middle school when we started this project. When we finished, They graduated from high school.
Wow, that's huge.
Right. But they left a legacy. What they left the city of Helena was the skate park. And I supported that whole crew of kids.
Yeah.
I mean, we would have meetings and parties up at the house here. At one point, they decided that a segment of the skate park would not work. And it was already under construction. And I said, well, then call a meeting of the head of the parks department, the city, another city official, the contractor, and get them down there and say, this won't work. What can we do? And they did. They spent the, got up first thing in the morning and called everybody they had to call and called a meeting. They called the meeting. Mm-hmm. And got everybody, and then changed how the park was going to be built and redesigned it on the hood of my truck.
Yes.
And Sean had even gone and online and found a guy that designed skate parks, and he had just finished one in Bozeman, and they hired him to come here and run the project. So, But they did it because they had support.
Mm-hmm. You know, you think about all of the different systems that run our society, and I think we're in a huge moment right now of trying to figure out a way to where those systems, starting at the smallest uh-huh. level up to the largest level, can give people the support they need in order right. to live well and to thrive. And it's complex. But, you know, it's amazing to see how humans and how kids flourish and mature when given the proper attention and right. care and love.
The mayor, which was Colleen McCarthy at the time, she was in favor of the park. She was, actually the city was on our favor, on our side with the park. So we'd go to city county meetings, and I had like six or eight of the skateboarders, and they would be huddled over in the corner. Hopefully nobody would notice they were there. But the mayor knew who they were and knew them by name. And she would call them, say, Sean, why don't you come up to the podium and say what you think about this? Or Matt, you know, Matt Clinch, why don't you come up and say something? And these kids would, you know, shudder. The fact that they got to go up and say something, you know. But they learned that they had a voice and that they had support. And that was great. So it was just an extension of what you can do, you know, just support them. Mm-hmm. And that's basically what I did. Mm-hmm. And I still do mm-hmm. with my kids.
So given that you've lived at a yoga center and conscious living center for a majority of your life, almost the last 50 years. There's so much along the way that I'm sure that you have picked up. I am curious of what you would say today is your spiritual practice or your sacred practices or the things that keep you connected and
sane
and, you know, just keep you thriving and engaged in life.
My biggest thing is being thankful. I mean, I go through my house when I'm here by myself, and I look at different segments of this house and know how it came together, or look out the windows and see what's out there, and I just give thanks to the power that made all this possible, made me being here possible. I mean, I was raised as a Catholic until I had a foul experience with the Catholic Church and walked away from it. And coming to the ranch, there's a lot of spiritual awareness here. I mean, India brought Hinduism here. Never knew anything about Hinduism. Now I know a little bit about Hinduism. I know of Sai Baba. I've been in his presence as close as I am to you right now. Mm-hmm. And Buddhism, those are probably my two closest touchstones to any spirituality at this point. Mm-hmm. I don't have any particular practice that I follow. I just live in this place. I feel I live in a cathedral. Mm-hmm. You know, the whole place, I mean, I look out the window and there's, you know, snow-capped mountains around me. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't see anybody else's house or wires or roads or anything. So it's what God or that energy or that force put here. That's what I get to enjoy every day, to look at that with thanks every day. Thank you for being here. Thank you for this house. Thank you for these people that I get to associate with. Everything, it's just a big thank you. Just living thanks for what you have.
Tom Ryan, a jack of many trades and a reliable source of grounded, calm energy. After digging into the law of attraction, I'm walking away from this conversation with a sense of trust in my life path, which isn't always easy to embody. I don't know about you, but it's always been helpful to me to ask questions of those who have had a lot more life experience than I have, to listen to their stories and learn from their explorations and findings of how I may be able to live more true to myself. Tom's certainty and his own life reflections were inspiring. Why things happened the way they did, and how the universe delivered exactly the experiences that he needed to get him to where he is today. The nugget of wisdom that I'm taking with me is the idea that we can't possibly take a wrong turn. Your lived experience is the path, no matter how many things you think you're missing out on or how many decisions you think will make or break you, that's all part of it. And the universe will continue to nudge you in the direction that allows you to realize your full potential, even if it doesn't make sense at the time. To connect further with Tom, please visit blackmountainpropertymanagement.com. A special thank you to Matthew Marsalek and the Drum Brothers, whose music you hear at the beginning and end of this podcast, as well as Dr. Jean Shinoda Bolin, who first turned us on to the phenomenon of the dandelion effect and how ideas move through the world. This podcast is a production of the Feather Pipe Foundation, a 501c3 dedicated to healing, education, community, and empowerment. If you'd like to help support this project, please visit featherpipe.com/gratitude to donate and leave a review on Apple Podcasts and share with your friends. Be sure to tune in to our next episode in 2 weeks. We cannot wait to share another amazing conversation with you. Until then, and as always, have a beautiful day.